This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
Picking up our treatment, let's remember what we are doing is a very natural thing to do. We were discussing this morning at our first healing meeting, 10 minutes past 10, to which any of you are welcome to come if you wish to, in the balcony. All through life, everything we do in life, we deal with a power greater than we are, an intelligence beyond ours, but we don't think about it. We don't quite realize it. We are not aware of it. We take it for granted. We accept it. We accept that there's some kind of a power that holds us in the place. We assume, we call it gravitational force. No one really knows what it is. We accept that there is some intelligence that is creative, that converts our food into the physical body. No one knows how. Biology is a study of the human body, but it doesn't know anything about how the thing works, only that it works in a certain way and under certain conditions. So it is with everything in life. We are accepting the impossible, the miracle of existence everywhere, all the time, and in everything that we do. It's impossible to avoid it. For some peculiar reason, throughout the ages, things that are spiritual, we are superstitious about. We are afraid of. We have an awe, which we don't have about other things in nature. We do not accept that there might be a creative force and intelligence operating upon our word, just as there is in and through our body. But there is. Therefore, we are a little bit strained. Seems peculiar to think I can give a treatment and have something happen. Now, people have always believed they can pray and that something might or might not happen. If it happened, it was the answer to prayer. If it didn't happen, it was God's will that it shouldn't. You might as well say, I plant potatoes. If potatoes grow, that's the miracle of God. If they do not, it's God's will that they should not. That would be a superstitious approach. So let us definitely believe that our word is the presence, it is the power, it is the activity of a spiritual principle around us and within us and through us. Whether we think our word operates directly as a power, or through a power, or a power operates upon it, which I believe, doesn't matter. I think if we believe that we have to put the power in, we shall make it difficult. I think if we believe that we have to convince something, we'll never know whether we've convinced it. I think that we should believe that our word is operated upon by a power acting as law, merely because that's the way everything else happens in nature. And what we're doing is either a part of the natural process of life, or it would have to be outside of nature, which it cannot be. There is nothing outside of life, nothing alien to living, nothing separate from, different from, or other than life. Now, we accept that because we say, of course. But the moment we say there is nothing different from God, because we are reared in superstition, and because the ages have been afraid of God and the future, we don't feel just as we do if we say there's nothing but life. If we go anywhere and say, well, life is, there seems to be a life principle in everything, everybody says, why, of course there is, certainly. But the moment we say with Emerson, there's one mind common to all men, and every man uses that mind whether he wants to know, people say, well, I don't know about that. I'm not sure about that. I think that can't be, merely because we have thought of the life principle of God as being separate from his own creation. But in reality, should we say, there is one life, that life is God, that life is my life, that life is perfect, that life is this life right now, this heart is the heart of God, a part of the universal pulsation beating through everything, we should be speaking the truth. It can be demonstrated in physical science. For wherever you find a physical heart, whether it's in a bird, an animal, an ox, the heart of Jesus or Socrates or Plato, the heart of a mud turtle or a chicken, there's just one rate of vibration, the heart, in the whole universe, and to liver, and to brains, if any. Wonderful, isn't it? What is this but the thought? What is this but the proof that there is only one heart beating in everything, and we get out of rhythm with it, therefore it looks as though it were out of rhythm with us. What do you think would happen if we all vibrated to that one? We wouldn't have any heart trouble. Well, now let us think back to that divine center within us, which is both God and man. There is one life. That life is God. That life is our life. And that life is perfect right now. There is one life. There is no other life. We know this. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life right now. I accept it in its perfection, in its wholeness. And there is no other life. And no other presence. And no other power anywhere. Every organ in action and function of this physical body is in tune with the infinite. One with the everlasting presence and the perfect peace and the divine joy of all things. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is our life right now, and there is no other life right now. Now, and it's here, and it's today, and we experience it. Now we know this is true about everyone in this room. Everyone. Therefore, we surrender everything that denies this perfect life. We surrender everything that says it is not so, because it is so. There is one divine and perfect life within everyone in this room. And it is manifesting perfectly, perfect circulation, perfect assimilation, and perfect elimination. Right now. all the power there is, all the presence there is, and all the life that there is God the living Spirit Almighty. This is what we acknowledge in every organ, in every action, in every function of this body. We acknowledge the presence and the power of perfect being. And we announce that our word eliminates everything that denies that, whatever it's called. Because there is no denial of the truth. The truth cannot be denied. There is a perfect pattern of this body at the center of this body. And we accept it as active in this body, in everyone here. And as we think of someone else, wherever he may be, whom we would like to help right now, identify him or her with our words and say, this is the truth about this person, here and now. There is but one life. That life is God. That life is this person's life. And it is perfect right now. All the power and all the presence and all the life that there is. And there is no other life, no other power, and no other presence. This is the truth. And now as we turn to our affairs, we know that we are divinely guided. There is only one mind. That mind is God, and we claim that mind right now, and we say it is operating in and around and through us right now, the mind of God. There is one divine and perfect mind within us, knowing what to do under every circumstance and condition, and every situation whatsoever. Now, if we have a problem, let's just bring it to mind, say, all right, and then say, this problem is solved. Let us say we know what to do. We are impelled to do it. We accept the answer. The answer is perfect. There is no problem to the divine intelligence. There is no other intelligence. This ceases to be a problem, and instead of the problem, the answer is presented right here and now. Let us feel that the problem ceases, and the answer takes its place. Now, as we identify ourselves with abundance, with love and joy and happiness, life, we know that all the good that there is belongs to each one of us. We accept it for ourselves and each other. And it is so. Learning is spiritual economics. I do not know very much about economics. I do not know anyone else who knows very much about economics. There is such a great difference of opinion. But let us try to consider this morning some of the simple things that are back of our life, back of our economic system, back of what we call America, back of the chart, which is our Constitution, and the Declaration, which is our freedom, just briefly to see how they line up with what we might consider spiritual economics. Now remember, this is not talk on political economy or any other kind of economy. It's really a discussion of a spiritual philosophy, which I believe is self-evidently true, and interestingly to see how do we fit into the cosmic facts. First of all, there are two great realities in the universe, apparently. We didn't make them, and we can't change them. Now, what you and I didn't make and what we cannot change, we have to accept. It is said that one of the greatest scholars of England, I guess it was Macaulay, if you've read Macaulay's History of England, I think it is one of the, next to Emerson, the greatest classic in prose I have ever read. Somebody, he was on the platform, very grandly got up and said, "I accept the universe," and he leans over to a friend, he says, "Well, by gad, she'd better. There's nothing else she can do. After all, shall we or shall we not accept that water is wet, the world is round, and we are here? We don't have to accept whether we are all here. I don't know. Maybe if we weren't all here, we'd be somewhere else. I often wonder about that. I've often wondered if we got, I don't mean good enough, but intelligent enough, for all we know, we'd be whisked out and never leave anything behind for the undertaker to bury. And that would wreck another business, wouldn't it? A very good business, too. But one thing is certain about the universe, it is one. There's only one universe. The ancient Jews said God is one. Emerson said there's one mind common to all men. The Mohammedans say there's no God save Allah, and Mohammed is his prophet. Science tells us there's only one final substance out of which all forms are made. And Einstein tells us there's only one law in physics common to all laws, governing all laws, synthesizing, coordinating. Now this is terrific, because what Einstein is really saying is, was his last pronouncement, he never did elaborate on it very much, but he did say that after 35 years he believed he had discovered one physical law that governs all physics. Well, now that's no different than Emerson saying there's one mind governing all minds. In other words, the universe is one undivided and indivisible system. God is one. Therefore, all of God is wherever you and I are. And in a certain symbolic sense, all of God is everywhere. Somebody got very angry at that. I got quite a terrific letter the other day from some sweet soul. Those things never bother me, it hardly ever happens, but she said, and sincerely, "I cannot stand to have you say you're God." I never did say I'm God, but I did say God's what I am. I don't blame her for wondering how God got that way. I don't blame her for that at all. But God still is what I am, or else I am not. And I can't help it. There's no conceit to that. How much of gravitational force is holding you in place? All of it. How much of the principle of mathematics is in the figure two, which is only a symbol? All of it. If every mathematician in the universe uses the figure two all of his life, he won't wear it out or make a dent in it. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Think how nature replaces our fingers. You watch a typewriter, if the fingers were solid steel, in a few months they'd be worn out. Just as fast as it's worn out, something replaces it. There is a flow of life into everything. Behold, I make all things new. Well, it's a sense there's only one life and we live in it. Now, in this one life, The next great thing is, and this is what's back of our government, what's back of democracy, really, in my estimation, because back of these things have to be great spiritual principles, or they wouldn't exist. And I believe it's only in such degree as any society goes along with it, whether they know it or not, they'll cease to exist. They'll automatically be prospered while they go along with it. Doesn't matter what the present moment may seem, only that exists which is right in the long run, or the universe would deny itself. Within this infinite oneness, there's a multiplicity. Here are 1,000 different kinds of plants. Go through the wonderful Golden Gate Park, one of the most wonderful parks in the world. All these different kinds of trees and ferns and plants, each one so different from every other one, and yet they all are fed by one creative soil. Here is many in one, e pluribus unum. It's our national motto. That is the meaning of a federated state. Now, these are the two great principles of nature, oneness and multiplicity, one and many, but the many never deny the one. They are always manifesting the one by individualizing it. Now, if you and I to go out here in the park and we see a rose bush, and then we see behind it a pineapple, which we won't see here, but suppose we did, and then over here is a cow eating the rose bush and a pig eating the pineapple, which we won't see. That would have to be a goat. We wouldn't say the goat looks different from the cow. The cow looks different from the pig. The rose bush looks different from the pineapple. Therefore, there aren't any of them real. We wouldn't say that. We would not say they all have a different kind of a God. And they each have a different kind of a nature. We would just say, well, look at nature. Isn't it marvelous how the goat and the cow and the pig and the pineapple and the rose bush and the heart of Christ, the intelligence of Plato and Emerson, the imagination of Shakespeare, all come out of one thing. We know it. Therefore, we say unity and multiplicity, the one in the many and the many in the one. Now, this is the very principle of democracy. And we cannot violate either part of this principle. I was going to say without destroying it. Of course, we never can destroy the principle. We cannot violate either part of this principle without going contrary to the nature which is back of it, or of God. Anything that denies the unity of the whole and says that everything is separate from the whole and has a good that's all its own that doesn't belong to the rest is not so. It doesn't matter who believes it so, it isn't so. It just isn't. Anything which denies the unique individualization of the whole and tries to reduce everything to a common level or a common denominator contradicts nature. It's complete contradiction. Unity is not uniformity. It's one of the great philosophic fallacies of communism. People in our philosophy just couldn't believe in communism. Of course, nobody can. It doesn't seem to me, but I mean, of all people, they couldn't. Because we understand the two foundations of all life, unity and multiplicity, and that they have to go along together, which means exactly what we have here. Everyone is an individual, but the individuals organize and declare a constitution under which they will live, because that's the way the universe is governed. Anything that would reduce all persons to a common level, political, economic, social, intellectual, or emotional, is completely contradictory to the laws of life. Now, I know lots of idealists. I'm an idealist, but a practical one. Lots of idealists don't see that. They are sincere, but silly. Nature doesn't do it. You can always tell the difference between a rose bush and a grasshopper. Always. You can always tell the difference between a lion and a lamb. Now, that doesn't mean that the lion and the lamb shouldn't learn to get along together. And I guess unless the lion was pretty hungry, they would get along. I never did hear of a lamb eating a lion. That would be an amazing feat, wouldn't it? Although I did read about a little girl, the Sunday school teacher showed them a picture of Daniel in the lion's den. And the Sunday school teacher said, why did not the lions attack Daniel and carry him apart? They all had an answer, but one little girl put up a hand. She said, teacher, I know. The lions were not afraid of Daniel. An interesting viewpoint. I believe she was right. Because we are now told by science that fear exudes an odor which an animal smells and attacks in self-protection. Daniel was not afraid of the lions. Therefore, the lions were not afraid of Daniel. I read a brochure called The Scent of Fear, written by a scientist. I haven't any doubt about it. Now then, we have unity and uniformity, which is nature's way of expressing. That is what is back of our whole system. But you cannot, because we have unity, I don't mean uniformity, you have unity and multiplicity. You cannot reduce all the things to one thing that, as though they would act all would act alike. Nature never reproduces itself. If there were two people and they were exactly alike, one would be unnecessary to God and to life. No two thumbprints. Consequently, individuality and everything that goes with it belongs to reality. Now, that's what in our system we call private enterprise system. It is what under our economic system we call capitalism. But unfortunately, most people confuse the thought capitalism with capital. Has nothing to do with it. A person could be a capitalist and be broke. He merely believes in the individualization and that it must not be violated. But at the same time, he ought to believe and may believe that people ought to get together and ways and methods and means ought to be worked out to provide for everyone, so long as they do not violate that individual expression. Suppose there were only one religion in America, and it were a state religion, and we couldn't have any other, and it wasn't ours, then we wouldn't have one. You see, nature provides for the expression of everything and merely says this, nothing else. You can express what you are as far and wide and deep and handsome as you wish to, but you can't do it at the expense of another. That's all it ever says, because the other also is an individualization. Well, fortunately for us, we live under such a system and we believe in it. I like us to know its terrific spiritual importance, because too much loose thinking about those things. Any consistent spiritual system of thought, any philosophy that has common sense and goes along with the dictates of nature, will know that the individualization of God must go as far as it wants to, so long as it harms everyone else, no one else. How can it hurt anyone if I am happy? Now, if in order to be happy I have to make someone else unhappy, then that's bad. And I should be violating a law of nature which finally would come back to me as a man sows, so shall he reap. Nature merely says this. I said to somebody the other day, now stop being unhappy. She said, come in, I want to talk. I said, I will not talk to you again while you do nothing but complain. I don't believe we have to sit down and cry with everybody who cries. If you do, there aren't tears enough. I just have to carry an onion in each hand. Now, that's kind of a weeping and wailing that doesn't do any good. Now, she thought that was very unkind. She said, how can you say such a thing? I said, now, look here, I love you, and I'm not unkind. But I'm not going to add to your confusion. Any day you want to come in and say, let's talk about happy things, my time is yours. And I'll pay you for the privilege of talking to you. You see, you and I can't change it. It doesn't do any good for any individual to suffer so far as the salvation of his soul or anybody else's soul is concerned. This whole philosophy that we get there by suffering is a part of a morbid psychology. Now, I'm not saying we have not learned by suffering, I won't. I have, you have, we'll continue, but what are you going to do with a suffering God? Any philosophy that tells us that God suffers and wants us to is intellectually insane. Now, don't tell anybody I said that. I shouldn't have said it. It was true before I said it, however. It just does not line up with the universe. God is not unhappy. If God, the giver of all life, were unhappy, and if the life of God went through us and the only life we had, then we'd have to be unhappy. It's impossible. Cannot be. Therefore, the thought, you ought not to be happy because I'm unhappy, or you ought not to be financially independent because I'm impoverished, is silly. It's contradictory to nature. The unhappy person, however, can become happy. The impoverished one can seek a betterment, as he certainly should. But if we were to try to reduce all of the top intellectuals of the world to the level of all of the psychological morons, we would destroy the intelligence of the age in which we live. Interesting, isn't it? If we were to take all of the supremely happy people and reduce them to the level of all unhappiness, do you think it would do the world any good? If half of the world, each one of them, were in a mud puddle, and the other half observing them wanted to help them, would it do the ones who were not in the mud puddle any good to get in and wallow around in the mud, and the mud of the ones who were in the puddle? Not a particle. This is a false sympathy. Now, I love people, and no one has any more sympathy than I have. It's impossible to have it. I like people so it hurts, but it's a good kind of a hurt. But it does not do any good for joy to be reduced to sadness. It does not do any good for success to be reduced to poverty, for individualization to be reduced to a non-entity. It does not do any good. Moreover, wherever it happens, the few who are left who seize the thing at once become the dictators. We all know how the practical application of it works out. Now, I consider these great spiritual truths And I consider that since they are, we ought to try to better mold our lives and conduct in accord with the laws of nature, which are laws of God. Because as we look about and discover nature, as we see how the laws, animals and plants, the migrations of birds, the law of chemical affinity and attraction and repulsion in physics, we are studying how the mind of God works. This is the mind of God. As Pope said, all are parts of one stupendous whole whose body nature is with God, the soul. If we would forget and no longer think of the universe as being divided against itself, if we could take the simple proposition that every law in physics or in chemistry has a law exactly like it in the life of our mind, we should understand how the mind works, and we should understand our own science. Wherever there is a polarity, there is an attraction. At the center of the physical atom, there is a positive charge of electricity around which gravitate the negative charges. At the center of every successful business, the same thing happens, but the positive is the mind of the person who's doing it. Now, I'm not speaking about positive as the aggressive kind that knocks them over, you know. Hits them right between the eyes and drags them out and asks for more. That isn't positiveness. That's an aggression based on a sense of negativity. Always. It's like the psychological superiority complex. It is merely an inferiority complex whistling to keep up its courage, like a little boy. In the dark, he is so afraid. At the center of every group where there is love and harmony, there is a mind of love and harmony around which everything gravitates and which in its own orbit automatically throws off everything that denies it. Now this is where our philosophy comes in. This is the economics of the spirit. At the center of all success is somebody who knows success. At the center of every enterprise is somebody who knows it. At the center of every invention is the mind that invents and the idea. Back of everything in the universe, in the cosmos, from a blade of grass to whatever we think of as big and important, there is a pattern. Now, it's only recently that science has announced that the physical universe is a shadow cast by an invisible substance. This is why the Bible said, do this according to the pattern shown thee on the mount. In the philosophy of Plato and that group, they said that everything in this world is a copy of a pattern over yonder. By over yonder, they meant within. What they meant was this: at the center of everything, as Whitman said, nestles the seed of perfection. Now, if there were not something perfect at the center of your being and my being, we would not be here. We could not. That something is a divine unity forever attempting to manifest through us in a variation that gratifies itself. In my estimation, everything in the universe exists for the delight of God. I do not see what else it can be. Riley, I think, was right when he said, as it's give me to perceive I most certainly believe that when a man's glad plumb through, God's pleased with him, same as you. What I'm trying to do this morning, probably inadequately, is to show, first of all, that according to our spiritual system of thought, we belong in America. It's a part of us. No matter how many mistakes we make in our public life, we have the only system that's the nearest, like divine. Whatever may be wrong, it is still the nearest to the divine pattern because it complies with the two fundamental realities which we didn't make and we can't change, unity and uniformity. Next, that every individualization must be allowed to go as far as it wants to, so long as it hurts nobody else. That the unity runs through all and binds all together. Inequality, but not in a conformity of manifestation. That's the mistake that people make. You can't do it. Nature hasn't done it. Any system that ever tries to do it is absolutely certain to fail. Just a question of when, why. I mean, not why, but where. Nothing can ultimately succeed that denies the nature of reality. It's impossible. All right, then, at the center of my being, now this isn't conceit, so please understand me when I say it, it's the center of your being. I believe at the center of my being there's something terrific and wonderful. And I believe it's there with everybody, and we ought to listen greatly to it. Emerson said, learn to listen greatly to yourself. That's what he meant. He certainly was not conceited. Jesus made the greatest claim on God that anyone ever made. The Father and I are one. Who has seen me has seen the Father. Believe that I am the Father, and the Father and me also believe me for the very work's sake. And so forth. Philip said, show us the Father, and it suffices us, sufficeth us. And Jesus saith unto him, have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? Who hath seen me hath seen the Father. Now, Jesus knew what he's talking about. Who has seen a rose has seen God. Who has seen a child at play has witnessed the joy of God. Who has seen the beauty of the sunset has felt the beauty of God. Whose heart beats in the common denominator of humanity and divinity, individualized, beats with the rhythm of God. But the moment we get out of that rhythm, we have heart trouble. It's now known that most of us do the stomach, getting out of the rhythm of the sense of security. Most heart trouble is getting out of the rhythm of the conformity to that thing which, without reducing everything to a common denominator, lets the impulsion of its harmony flow through it. Oh, that's a terrible way to say this. All I'm saying is this. That we may have troubled hearts and die of them physically. God hasn't got any heart trouble. There is a heart that's whole. Every beat is in unity and rhythm with itself. It hasn't any burden. It has no fear. It has never placed any strain upon itself. There is a complete relaxation. And 90% of our heart trouble will be healed with that treatment right there. Just like that. Why? It just restores us to the natural pattern, that's all. The pattern is always there. The pattern of democracy exists eternally in the mind of God because it's the nature of God. Nothing will ever happen to it in the long run. The pattern of success exists eternally in the mind of God because God cannot fail. Whoever then can stop thinking of failure? Now, I know it isn't easy. We'll stop failing Whoever can begin to align himself with the pattern of the idea of success will begin to be successful, and nothing can stop him. Now, since we have lined up with these wrong patterns, sometimes takes a little time to learn to think straight. May not be in the flash of a second, twinkle of a bird's eye, but it will be there. Even Jesus labored long and fasted and prayed. Why? To change God? Of course not. Who by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? But to so align himself with God that he could come out and say, it is done unto you as you believe. There is a spiritual economy, and I think it works this way. There is no competition in it. The man who succeeds has no competitors in his own mind, because if he has them, he's always better than they are. Therefore, he hasn't got them. That's true. The man who is completely happy in life does not spend his time talking about unhappiness. The man who is completely successful does not spend his time day and night talking with failures. Now, this may sound cold. Remember, the truth is like a cannonball. We can't change it. He does not spend all of his time thinking about sadness and how bad it all is and how terrible. You ever go to these crepe hangers and you wish you were dead before you get out, but you get out just before you die? Or you wouldn't survive. It's no good. It isn't any good. It doesn't help anybody, one particle. And the only man who can live in heaven in this world is the one who has divorced himself from hell and everybody else, because in such degree as he sends somebody else, some part of him, the part with which he sent the other fellow goes with him. Isn't that justice? Without judgment, it's balance. I can have no good separate from the all good and everybody's good, but without hurting anybody else, I can use as much good as I want to and individualize it, and it would be wrong if I didn't. I believe at the center of my being is all the creativity there is. In the divine economics of the spirit, power that painted the sunset could paint in me. That beauty which diffuses itself in the morning sky and the softness of colors is in me. If it weren't, I couldn't see it. I couldn't know it. I couldn't understand it. The mind that wrote the plays of Shakespeare. Now, this is the way it is with God. All of it. Would it have done the world any good for Shakespeare to have refused to use his creative genius? Why, they would have just lost the works of the greatest artist of his kind who has ever lived. Would it have done the world any good for Jesus to have refused to be the power of God? Of course not. Therefore, in the divine economics of God, there's no competition. And there is no monopoly, and there is no jealousy, and there to enter into the success of another is to partake of his prosperity. In the divine economics of God, and isn't it wonderful that that's the American system? I think we ought to understand these things. Certainly people in our philosophy ought to. We are not a bunch of empty-headed, we're idealists, all right. But the ideal is the universal real flowing through every individual to the fullest extent of his permission, harming none and cooperating with all. This is spiritual democracy. It is the way it is with nature. Therefore, it must be the nature of God, or it wouldn't have created nature. I believe then that I should not refuse to be happy. I should not feel it is selfish to be prosperous. I should not feel it is wrong for me to have all the good I can get. Does it hurt anyone if I love everyone and everyone loves me? Is it going to hurt anybody? Why, of course not. Is it going to hurt anybody who's sad if I do nothing but cry because he's sad? Of course not. Someday when we adjust ourselves to the greater reality of the divine, without hurting anyone, loving everyone, wishing to lift everyone, giving all we've got to everyone, we'll know that we can only give what we've got. And we must first have that. Whether we call it success or love or beauty or truth or God. And I believe that the genius of Jesus lay in his complete independence of what everybody else thought. He did not pattern his life after the rest, but after that divine economy of the universal spirit into which he had entered and with which or whom he continuously communed. Now this is the very essence of religious science. Redeemed from the thraldom of the ages, in nonconformity with the individual expression, but knowing that it basically it is one with all religions, and that every religion is good. Asking no man, what shall I believe? But saying to itself, what I believe must not contradict common sense. Saying to no man, I shall refuse to act because you don't want me to, but saying my action must not hurt you. What if I do choose to be a nut? Are not nuts edible? Of course they are. And if I should be a peculiar kind of a nut, who shall say that it did not grow on the family tree? And I'm not speaking about my immediate ancestry either. The tree of life itself. Does it hurt somebody if somebody were to play a symphony beyond everything that had ever been done in beauty? Did Mozart bring bad to the world because he excelled in that harmony? Does it hurt anyone because his neighbor is happy? Not at all. This is the economics of the spirit. This is the spirit of democracy. I think it's the spirit of America. And I think those of us who are redeemed from the thraldom of the fear, coming into the liberty of the sons and daughters of God, must always remember that liberty does not mean license. Ever. There are two kinds of people. There are more than two kinds, but there are two kinds I think of. Two types among the many kinds. One who views evolution as a slow process, which is right, that we must conform with nature. The other, who thinks that the whole thing has to be destroyed for it to be adjusted, that is wrong. The flexibility and the tolerance, the adaptability, and what we might even call the compromise of with circumstances is what keeps buoyant individuals and nations. England maintained peace in Europe for 100 years by maintaining a balance of power. It's one of the smartest things any nation ever did. It would have been better had it have continued. Now, don't misunderstand me. If you don't understand what I'm saying, don't say, well, the guy's screwy. I'm not. Not too much, though. In other words, there is a flexibility in nature, a give and a take. If the tree didn't bend a little in the wind, it would be like an icicle and it would snap off right down close to the ground. There is a tolerance that comes with the democracy and the economics of spirit, the great tolerance of nature. And if you and I have learned anything at all, as so many of us have reach the meridian of human experience. We should have learned this, I feel. That there is good in everything, the whole world struggling as best it may possibly by some evolution pushed by an impulsion beyond itself to a goal it does not yet see, but inwardly feel. And I believe in that. Somehow or other, I believe there is in me something terrific, something wonderful. My intellect laughs at my stupidity. My heart bleeds at my inhumanity. But evermore there is something that sings, build thee more stately mansions, O my soul, while the swift seasons roll. Leave thy low vaulted past, let each new temple nobler than the last, shut to thee from heaven with a dome more vast, till thou at last art free in the economy of God, spirit of that democracy whose pattern is in heaven, and that humanity now saturated with its own divinity, climbing the slope of eternity to reach the summit of the infinite.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.